Adolf Hitler's favorite composer still has the power to inflame, at least for some people. This is Conducting Business, a podcast series about the music industry on WQXR.org. I'm Naomi Lewin. When the Los Angeles Opera staged its first production of Wagner's Ring Cycle in 2009, there were protests outside the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and local politicians threatened to cut off funding for the project. Here in New York, the Metropolitan Opera is now more than halfway through its latest Ring Cycle, and there's been hardly a peep of dissent, at least locally. Last month, though, a movie theater chain in Jerusalem said it would not screen two Wagner operas from the Met's HD live broadcasts out of sensitivity to its patrons. So can Wagner's anti-Semitic personal views be separated from his music? How should Wagner be treated in Israel, where he is still a hot-button issue? Joining us are three experts. Roberto Paternostro is music director of the Israel Chamber Orchestra. In July, he led that ensemble in Wagner's Siegfried Idol, along with works by Jewish composers, at the annual Wagner Festival in Bayreuth, Germany. Rabbi Yitzhak Adlerstein is director of interfaith affairs at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles. And Michael Beckerman is a professor and chair of the music department at New York University. So, Roberto Paternostro, first to you. What was behind your decision to bring an Israeli orchestra to perform Wagner in Bayreuth this summer? And what do you make of the ban on showing the Met's Wagner broadcasts in movie theaters in Israel? Can you reconcile those two?
First of all, I have to say I conducted Wagner operas, and I'm a great admirer of his music. And when I spoke in Israel with a lot of people, we decided to build a bridge and to go for the first time, not to play it in Israel, but to go for the first time with the Israeli orchestra outside Israel and to play a piece of Wagner, because he's a great composer.
And what do you think about the fact that the movie theaters in Israel have decided not to show?
I can understand this because, you know, also my family, I have a lot of family in Israel, also here in Vienna where I'm now. I have a lot of family which went through the whole terrible things which happened in the Holocaust, and there's absolutely no discussion that I respect the people. They don't want to listen, they don't want to hear, they don't want to get in touch with Richard Wagner, with his anti-Semitic, and there's no discussion about this. But he was a great composer, and I think when I spoke to my people in the orchestra, and we have a lot of young musicians in the Israel Chamber Orchestra, and we decided all together to go there and to play the music.
Rabbi Adlerstein, now you have said that Wagner was one of the literary architects of the Holocaust. What do you mean by that?
Well, his music cannot be separated from his politics, and Wagner said that himself. Wagner was extremely politicized. His anti-Semitism was not something that he kept close to his chest. He wrote and published twice an essay stating that Jews could have no role in the arts and in music. There are themes in his music that one can be oblivious to, but one is no longer oblivious to when you hear the words of the composer himself. That said, there are two separate issues here, the larger issue of separating art from the artist and another one of sensitivity. In Israel, where there still are so many survivors themselves and second generation, people for whom Wagner, as the hero of Adolf Hitler, as one whose Teutonic music was one of the foundational elements of Third Reich philosophy, want to have no part or turned off by it. And I believe that not everything that can be done should be done. And in Israel, as long as there are survivors alive, their sensitivities should be respected. Bayreuth is something else.
I want to get to the scholarly aspect in just a moment with Michael Beckerman. But first, I wanted to ask you, Rabbi, you were involved in the Los Angeles Ring Cycle protests. So you're saying now, okay, you don't perform Wagner in Israel, but you were involved in the protest against the Los Angeles Ring Cycle.
Right. We never took the position that Wagner should not be performed. That wasn't the issue. We've never taken that. The Los Angeles situation was slightly different. The city had thrown its weight behind a Wagner festival. And before the tales worked out, we had images of the visage of Richard Wagner staring down at us from light poles as the city paid tribute to the man and his music. We had no problem with the performance per se, but the rest of the hype didn't belong there. We also thought that there was going to be a festival, even around the Ring Cycle, that it was a teachable moment that should not be ignored. And indeed, James Conlon, who's been such a great champion of Survivor Music in his Recovered Voices program, was more than sensitive to us and did utilize the teachable moment and introduced the run-up to the Ring Cycle with the program of Recovered Voices and the performance of Schoenberg's Survivor from Warsaw. I think that's right in sync with what Maestro Paternostro did in sort of triumphing over Wagner on his own turf by bringing Israeli music to Bayreuth.
Okay, now I want to ask Michael Beckerman, as the music scholar here, the rabbi made a point about the man and his writing, and you can't separate them. But with the distance of history, do you not think we separate a lot of things?
You know, the writing is a thing. It's a body of printed work on the page. The music is a thing. It's a body also created by people realizing printed notes on a page. The man is an abstract concept, and Wagner was a very complicated man. But I guess I agree with a lot of what's been said, and I find there's a good deal of forbearance and broad-minded thinking. I think, though, it is harder than one can say to sort of easily link what he was calling the man and the music. Not so much because it's peculiar to Wagner's case, but music itself is so elusive and so difficult. You know, there are people who believe that 19th century music represents Western imperialism. If you were to take a little passage from a very famous work by Rimsky-Korsakov called Scheherazade, you know, some people might find that repugnantly anti-Arabic.
And of course, there were all the pseudo-Turkish operas that were written.
So, but in a specific case, I mean, I think those people who love Wagner, with the exception of Nazis and their ilk, love Wagner because they really come to believe that the music goes far, far beyond anything Wagner said. Even at the time, people who supported Wagner and loved him were deeply, deeply embarrassed, mostly by this kind of writing. And his writing about Jews and music continues to be deeply embarrassing and disturbing.
Well, how much did Wagner's anti-Semitism inform his music? There are people who suggest that the dwarves, Aberich or Mime, or the critic Beckmesser, were Jewish caricatures. Were they?
Dvorak had this wonderful line about Wagner. He said, if I could speak, I'd go up on top of the mountain and I would tell the Czech people something, but I can't speak. I'm not like Wagner. Wagner could speak. Well, this is a case where Wagner spoke too much. But even in speaking too much, he easily could have been explicit about Jewish characters if he meant them as such. What makes them so exciting to so many people is that they can get beyond the anti-Semitism, which is front and center if you want to confront it, to the much broader picture that these characters represent. So to say that Beckmesser is simply an anti-Semitic character, I think, is absolutely wrong. Now, music tends to be a matter of opinion. So let's imagine that there are people who come to believe that Beckmesser is an anti-Semitic caricature, whether Wagner said so or not. The dwarves are Jews. They find Wagner repugnant. It's a world of free speech, free will. I don't know that even in the Nazi period, people were pistol-whipped into going to hear Wagner operas. If people find any aspect of a musical experience repugnant, they simply don't have to engage it. My issue is why then they want to control everything and to make it impossible for other people who might want to hear it to engage it.
Rabbi Adlerstein and Maestro Paternostro, I'd like to hear your responses to that.
I think that perception is always more important than reality. Whether Wagner was in a position to talk about the possible anti-Semitism in Beckmesser and others, is something that's up for grabs. He did have Jewish patrons, and he did have Jewish sponsors. He even withdrew his first anti-Semitic tract for a while because of the pressure. I'm not sure if that's the way we should measure things. No less a person than Gustav Mahler, who incidentally was the one who was responsible for Hitler hearing Wagner for the first time. It was Mahler conducting. Mahler himself weighed in that some of the music and some of the characters were anti-Semitic. Even if there were not a modicum of truth to that, it is the way it's perceived. And I think it's just a question of good neighborliness, of not rubbing the wrong images in people's faces. When you live in a community, when you live in a country like Israel, and when the Holocaust is still as fresh in the minds of so many people, and there's so many people who've been affected by the greatest Jewish tragedy, the greatest tragedy for humanity in history, that we're not ready yet to make that clear distinction between Wagner and his music. We will be someday, but I don't believe that we are there yet.
We have this new Ring Cycle going in New York right now, where there are certainly many, many survivors of the Holocaust and their families. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the way to do it is the way that we promote it in Los Angeles, and that is to reject the notion that art always has an exemption from issues of morality and issues of ethics that are implied with it, which a small number of people in the arts sometimes promote. They separate them entirely, and art is above ethics. That's not the case. Many musicians understand that, and to join a production of the Ring Cycle with the kind of thing that we're doing here today with a discussion of the issues sounds to me like a fair balance and one that I think most survivors would be comfortable
with. Is that necessary to do, though, every time? The Met certainly hasn't done that.
I believe that as long as there are survivors who are raising the issue, that it is necessary to do.
Maestro Paternostro, I'd like to hear you. We haven't heard from you on this subject.
Yes, I was listening a long time, and I hope my poor English can express what I want to say. First of all, from a Jewish point of view, it was always also in the news that we go to Bayreuth and play Wagner, but what was a great big step, and everybody who was there, and you can see it also on TV, we play for the first time at the opening of the Bayreuth Festival, the Hatikva. This also, the newspapers in Israel, Haaretz, and everybody says it was a great moment to break this ice, and to the orchestra came in, and everybody, the German audience, and Katharina Wagner, they stood up, and we played the Hatikva. I think that was a big step. Just to say, we are here. We are here again. We are back. First of all. The second is, I don't remember who said it, but I remember my first visit in New York, and I was a young conductor, and I went to the Toscanini Broadcast Museum. I don't know if this name is right. And there are a lot of concerts from NBC Orchestra during the 40s, and Toscanini, who was absolutely anti-fascistic, he played a lot of Wagner music in the 40s, and Hitler was still in power. And I think there's no doubt and no discussion to respect the survivors, but then you cannot play Wagner also in Vienna, because my mother, she's still alive. She has the yellow star at home, like a terrible...
Memento.
Can you say relic? You
Memento,
so
yeah.
If this is an argument not to play where the survivors are, I had to say, so you cannot play it in Vienna, because my mother, she's sitting next to me, not now, but she's sitting next to me, and she has the yellow star still today in her house. So what? I think that's not a good decision. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you read the Cosima Wagner Tagebücher, the diaries, it's terrible. You get sick. But on the other side, there were two great composers like Karl Orff and Franz Lehár. And you can play these composers in America, you can do it in Israel, you can play Carmina Burana, and both were very close and members of the NSDAP and member and friends of Adolf Hitler. So I think there are two parts of discussion.
Yes, I understand, Rabbi, that you even have some Karl Orff as the ringtone on your cell phone. Now, why is it that Karl Orff is okay and Wagner is not? Karl Orff was actually alive and well in Nazi Germany and complicit with the regime.
Really
okay, again, let's go back to what I said and what I did not say. We did not oppose playing the Ring Cycle in Los Angeles. It was the question of exalting the man that surrounded it. We do not take a position that one should not play Wagner in Vienna, New York, Los Angeles, or anything else. Israel may be different because it is a Jewish state, the Jewish state, and has the largest concentration of Jews in the world and of survivors. That said, I do believe that wherever Wagner is played, the role that he played as a mentor, a muse, a guide to the Teutonic elements in Hitler's thinking and that of the Third Reich is far more important than anything that Karl Orff or Franz Leihard did.
Professor Beckerman,
I would not want to play Carmina Burana in front of a group of survivors who knew of his background and would be offended by that. My ringtone is heard by myself, and thank God my high school students don't understand the lyrics. As long as they don't, I can play it. That's not the same thing as someone whose stature as a musician and as a theorist informed the Third Reich, like Richard Wagner.
Michael Beckerman, how did Wagner become the Nazis' poster boy in our minds? Because they loved Beethoven and Bach and exalted them,
well,
too.
That's right, and that's the flaw in the arguments that we're hearing about that, that because the Third Reich adopted Wagner, they had plenty of other racial theory beyond Wagner, and it's perfectly clear that Hitler and company would have come to the same conclusions without any help from Wagner. I think all of us are quite familiar, no matter what area of endeavor we're in, of finding people who are spectacular examples of something, who have personalities and viewpoints and behaviors that we find repugnant. Anybody who's a baseball fan knew that one of the greatest players, Ty Cobb, was a famous son of a bitch that nobody liked, was a horrible person. Are we not to replay Bobby Fischer's great chess games because he engaged in a huge number of anti-Semitic rants? And if in the future somebody takes those anti-Semitic rants and uses them to do some damage, does that mean therefore we shouldn't play Bobby Fischer's games? I understand the issue in Israel, but I don't think it's an example of kindness or fairness to survivors. I think it's an unfortunate example of bad Israeli provincialism, which I hope they'll outgrow. Now, I understand there are social situations where compromises are necessary. That's why I understand what's going on in Israel. However, I think it's more of a sign of provincialism than it is a true respect for the experience of anybody who went through really horrible things in those camps, which went far, far beyond Wagner in every way.
Maestro Paternostro, you actually spent some time in Israel. Can I ask whether you know, are there copies of Mein Kampf, Hitler's book, in Israeli libraries? And, you know, what do they do about things that Michael Beckerman is talking about? You know, say poets like Ezra Pound, who espoused, embraced fascism.
I think that's really a problem. I mean, on one side, if you go in Israel to do the musician's house and you stay there, there is, in my opinion, and I have been in many, many houses, you find all the records and CDs of Wagner. So outside you cannot play, but inside you play Wagner, you hear Wagner, you love Wagner. That's the first. And the second is, I don't believe that the survivors are really a kind of argument now. I think there are a lot of survivors, all of them loved Wagner. And don't forget that there are great, great, great Jewish conductors who did Wagner all the time, beginning with Hermann Levy, who was the first conductor of Parsifal, till today of Daniel Barenboim and James Levine. So, I mean...
Rabbi, I would like you to address the question of separating the art from the person.
I think that to compare the contribution of somebody like Richard Wagner to the Third Reich with baseball players and chess players is somewhat offensive. There's a continuum of importance in life. There's a continuum of importance of contribution. There's a continuum of sensitivity. While all people have rights, certainly in the state of Israel, the rights of those people who endured the worst in humanity of man to man.
It's not the worst
in
humanity. There's constant inhumanity going on everywhere all the time. The Holocaust was horrible. There are many things going on, even at this moment.
No one is denying that, and there is still something unique about the Holocaust, and we can debate that at some other time.
And unique that it's not only Jews who were killed and suffered during the Holocaust.
That's not the topic of our discussion. That just makes the Holocaust even worse.
There are
all kinds of reactions of survivors. My mother is also a survivor. She didn't escape. She was in a concentration camp, and she won't listen to Wagner. And Wiesenthal Center does collect input from survivors. And, of course, we're aware of those who couldn't care less. And we have members who are eager listeners to Wagner's, and we have lots of the other kind as well. And they are there in significant number. And anything that plays down the uniqueness of the Holocaust and the uniqueness of the experience of those survivors, frankly, I find somewhat offensive.
Maestro Paternostro, some of the Israel Chamber Orchestra musicians said that they wouldn't perform Wagner's music in Israel, but they had no problem playing it in other places.
Nobody, no. Everybody joined the tour. Everybody. And we had a discussion with the orchestra, and we invited also a musician, a teacher at the University of Tel Aviv, and he spoke with the orchestra about Wagner, and it was a free decision of every musician to go there. It's really very difficult to understand that Wagner today, I mean, I can understand that Wagner became a symbol, but what I cannot understand is that you are not allowed to play Wagner in Israel for all these reasons, respect of the survivors, whatever, I agree. But there is no problem if you go in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem or in Rishon LeZion, you can drive Volkswagen, you have Mercedes, Lufthansa is going there. So what is this? I mean, are we speaking in two languages? We are the artists. We are not allowed to play Wagner, but everybody can buy a Volkswagen.
Right. I'm offended, I guess, by quite facile approaches that assume that this should be offensive when absolutely no one is forced into these concert halls or forced to listen to things, that it seems to me that we have competing issues. And in Israel, they've decided in a way on a violation of free speech, free musical speech, for what I think is not a strong enough issue of the supposed offense that Holocaust survivors are going to take. But that if Holocaust survivors take that offense, then everybody should be taking that offense. And I think in a way, Rabbi, we all take a grave offense at Wagner's words. Everybody takes, and we must continue to take grave offense at those words and make it clear that this is what he did, but that he also wrote extraordinary music that raises, again, issues that go far beyond the piddling thoughts that he put in there. And we have to, of course, lament deeply that people far, far worse and more despicable than Wagner took some of his ideas as part of their really horrific attempt to rule the planet on their own terms.
Rabbi, how do you respond to that?
So on that last articulation, we're apparently all in agreement, but saying that an issue is fraught does not reduce the responsibility for us to come up with practical guidelines of balancing the needs of different people. I completely reject the notion that those survivors and the next generation who are so deeply sensitive to what the Holocaust was and its unique role in history, that they are offended by music, because music does affect all of us more deeply than the Volkswagen or Mercedes that we drive.
Why should Wagner's music be more offensive than a car that was actually a product of the Nazi regime?
Yeah,
because the product did not have any contribution to the outcome of the ideology. I agree entirely that Hitler could have done and would have done everything he did without Wagner. The fact that Wagner was so dear to him and those close to him as a refraction of the Third Reich ideology is something that I understand entirely would make people more sensitive than seeing a Mercedes, a Volkswagen. And to tell you the truth, in the 1950s, for a while. There were problems with driving Volkswagens and Mercedes in Israel, and there was the time that Mercedes buses were not welcomed until they became part of German reparations.
That brings us to the final question. Will it ever be okay to perform Wagner's music in Israel? Let me start with Maestro Paternostro.
I said it before, I do believe that there will be a time. I just think it has not yet arrived. I don't think it's so many decades off in the future, but it is not in the year 2011.
Well, as I said, I understand it, and I understand why people would boycott a concert and why they would not want to go to one and why they might write editorials. For a place like Israel, where many Jews have been the victims of totalitarian behaviors and restriction of personal freedoms, to stop other people from playing things, particularly things that have become very important in world culture, seems to me, again, more provincial than anything else. And someone mentioned playing Hatikva. At some point in the future, will people whose families in Gaza were killed by bombs have the right to say, I don't want to hear Hatikva? No, I don't think they do. These are conflicts that we just have to get through. But I don't think that a ban on Wagner was ever worthy of either the survivors or the state of Israel's high aspirations.
Okay, Maestro Roberto Paternostro, I'm going to give you the last word on when will it be okay to perform Wagner's music in Israel.
I don't know. I mean, there is one man in Israel, he's a survivor, he's a journalist in Haaretz, and he was against our project to go to Bayreuth, and he said, let us die, and then you can play Wagner. But I don't want to wait for someone's death. I want to play Wagner now. I want to play all the music I want to play now. Nobody offending, and with all the respects of the survivors, but it's a free will. If they come to the concert, if they come to the music hall, if they stay, if they buy a ticket, nobody is forced to do it. Like, nobody of my orchestra was forced to play Wagner and to go to Bayreuth.
Well, this is clearly a question on which there is no answer yet. I want to thank you all for joining us. This has been the latest edition of the WQXR.org podcast, Conducting Business, with guests Roberto Paternostro, music director of the Israel Chamber Orchestra, Rabbi Yitzhak Adlerstein, who's the director of interfaith affairs at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, and Michael Beckerman, who is the chair of the music department, professor of music at New York University. Brian Weiss produces this podcast. The engineer was Bill O'Neill. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.